ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily, as we get into round 23 of the AFL Premiership season, or as we love to say, the penultimate round of the home and away season. And really, there's one game of significant consequence on Sunday, but we're here to pull apart all of them. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the desk from me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. Great to be here. We're up in Darwin, and I'm sweating from places that I didn't know you could sweat from. When you come out of Melbourne, and it doesn't get above 13 degrees,
yep.
And you come to Darwin, and it's 29 degrees, sunny, and 89,000% humidity.
Yep.
I am sweating.
Must be said, too, you're on the back end of a little lurgy.
And we share everything, Corbin. I mean everything. So we thought we'd share the lurgy.
So I appreciate
you've
that.
Picked it up now.
Thank you very much for passing that on. I feel like I'm at the start of it, which is exactly what you want when it's 35 degrees and stinking hot and everything else. But $130 later at the chemist, and I've got everything you could possibly want to try and get over something like that.
To be fair, I think you suggested that we take my son to the museum.
Yeah, so you
for the little kids
for that.
Display. I went to check the ticket on the car's parking, came back, and he said he's been putting blocks in his mouth. I said, that's good.
That's what he does.
He got sick days after that. I've picked it up. His mum's picked it up. You've picked it up now.
Yeah, so it's just victim blaming, it feels like, from you. Brett DiLidio's here. He's full of health, as always. I'm not sure if he's made any citizen's arrests or anything like that, but he's with us, as always, on ABC AFL Daily. Hello, Lids.
Good morning, gents. Yes, no, I'm always on the lookout to be a good citizen, and you know, I threaten to, and Katie said, will you just let that go? But unfortunately, it just doesn't come up, you know, so I've got to start looking a bit harder, but... The last person I thought who would be arresting someone and putting someone in a headlock would be our gentle little Mark Murphy. He was very much an outside player, didn't very rarely tackled, but to nail some bloke in Italy, of all places, well done. Got to tip your lid.
That's, mate, big time. So we sat in the studio with him on Monday night, and he came in, he was talking about how everyone's going, and Max is a bit unwell coming back from overseas and everything else. This tells you everything you need to know about Mark Murphy. Did not mention it. Like, people messaged us yesterday saying, how did you not ask Mark Murphy about that, get him to tell the story and everything else? If I had done that, I would have been telling everybody I know before I'd even come back into the country, let alone once I return and everyone goes, oh, mate, how was your trip? And he just forgets to admit, or it's not a huge part of the story, that, oh, yeah, I put this bloke in a headlock and waited for the cops to come and arrest him. He's a weapon, isn't he?
He's a humble man, mate. He's a humble man.
Yeah.
They've actually added a stat line on AFL tables, Rome. And it's his first tackle. So it's incredible that his first tackle's come in Rome. But when in Rome,
Good on him. Good on Murph. We'll catch up with him before long, no doubt. All right, the weekend of footy, the huge talking point that's dominated the football landscape since we were together last Thursday, Lids, is around Jake Colajasny. He will be unavailable for selection at AFL or VFL level. Now, the Cats have submitted their response after their pleas explained. We learnt last night that a King's Counsel has been engaged by the AFL to accept the submission and then make judgment of it. So there will be a little bit of separation here between the AFL executive, the staff, the commission, which I think was appropriate as an outcome. And Sonia Hood said as much with us on 774 ABC Melbourne on Monday morning. I guess that the question is here, Lids, as to whether they'll investigate any further or they'll just... judge the error in what lodging, basically, like the paperwork error, or whether they got a chance to delve further into who knew what and when.
Well, I don't know where I sit on all of this. I mean, I don't want to be outraged by it. I think it was what I see probably from Geelong is that they explore all options and they've gone and they've done that. Whether I think it's right or wrong, I can understand both parties and both sides. As to, I can understand the player. I can understand the club probably wanting to protect itself. Yeah, I don't know what I should be feeling or thinking. Put myself in that position as a player, I probably would have done the same thing as Jake. Put myself in that position as a manager, I wouldn't have been letting that be ticked off until it was ticked off by the AFL. So, I've got a foot in both camps, if that makes sense.
The other news out of last night, Lauren Wood and the Herald Sun reporting that Alan Pearce, who's the associate professor and also concussion expert, recommended that the amber setting needs to be removed from the concussion panel. So at the moment, they can give back a green light or a red light or essentially an amber light, which is what Jake Colajasny reportedly received. And then it's essentially on the player and the club to work out, as they've done in this case, whether his career can continue. I think we all agree on that front, don't we? That if you've got a concussion panel of experts, they need to give a definitive finding. And if it is the case that amber turns out that it's red, then so be it. It needs to be yes or no.
But I think that points to what concussion is. Like, we don't really know. You can only know in the fullness of time. And after someone's deceased, unfortunately, when they investigate the brain, that's the only way we can know.
Of course. But isn't it also, if they're not going to make a judgment on the balance of possibilities, who is? It's not the job of the player or his agent AFL.
I agree with you, but I'm just saying, I think clearly we're all uncertain as to what it looks like. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, this is what we called for on Monday, on AFL Monday, wasn't it? An independent investigation as to who knew what, who knew it when, and where did the error arise from, like you said, Corb?
Yeah. Do you think there's a path back for Steve Hocking and Craig Drummond, so the chief executive and the president at the Cats? I know there's a lot of focus on their particular positions at the moment.
Well, I haven't had a lot of dealings with Hock. I think I met him once when I was trying to get to the Cats many, many years ago. And other than that, I've seen that I think he's run a pretty successful program at the Cats, and also he's a little bit short time at the AFL. But yeah, I think that with a please explain it and what's actually happened, unless it was completely untoward, I think that. But that's what the investigation's about, is it not? Mm. Like, let's find out what it's all about and see who's in the wrong. And if there is, well, then no, there isn't a place to come back. But if there is, and there's a justifiable reason for it, well, yeah, proceed.
And that's the bit I think that we need. We need the King's Council to be able to look into a lot of those. To look into both guys and their role in it, along with various other people along the way, and make a ruling from that point on, rather than just, hey, here's a $75,000 fine or whatever the number turns out to be, and proceed from there. All right, the games that are ahead of us. Obviously, we'll get to the Cats, but it all starts on Friday night. So no Thursday night footy. It's worth shouting out here as well. This was a window that was left open for the AFLW season opener. Only the AFLW actually started last Sunday, so it's a sort of an unusual quirk in the fixture lids where there's no Thursday night footy. So the W gets centre stage there. We'll come back to that in just a moment. But Fremantle and Adelaide opens round 23 for the men's competition. And our key question here, did we see a vulnerability in the Dockers last Saturday at the MCG?
Well, if you did, what was it? What was the vulnerability?
I think it was mainly their work around the ball. So Adam Ramanauskas was big on this. I think they lost contested ball by 26?
25.
25. And Rama's been big on the Dockers all year, and he sort of felt a little bit shaken by it. Thought, I don't know, that the D's just...
Oh, because finals become so contested and you have to be able to do that.
Just on maybe. That, can I pick it up there, Lids? So Caleb Sarong, 21 disposals. Andy Brayshaw, 20 disposals. Dirty, dirty day for him. And Hayden Young, 19 disposals. So Melbourne plus 34 post-clearance contested possessions, plus 19 ground ball gets. Corbin was really big on this last few years around Fremantle, that their midfield can get beaten and they can get beaten badly. So, we did see that again.
So you'd suggest that not only were they beaten on the inside, but then they'll beat into the next contest as well, which is something that they've probably hung their hat on, isn't it? Wrong and Brayshaw in particular, I don't think we're seeing the absolute best of Hayden Young just yet. Shade Bolton, he can be, he's always been a little bit in and out of the game. And Murphy Reid was taken out of the game by Colton Dahlstrup. I think for them, it's more about, all right, what did we learn out of that game? We know that if we're to, and they will be embarrassed by that. They're, big build up to this game, and obviously they don't get to play on the G. So what do we learn, and how do we then make sure that we rectify that going forward? If that's their vulnerability and they still got that close to probably one of the best teams that play the G, I think they'd be okay, because that's just a little sharpen up. And also, I think, and everyone's made mention of just where they're not rewarding their teammates a little bit. Paddy Voss obviously going for that goal and whatever else. I think that's, we just need to make sure, plus Alex Pearce, their key linchpin down back, the guy who actually, Harrison Petty does not mark those balls down deep if he's playing.
Yeah, and there was one with Matt Johnson, who I've been quite big on this year. He had two guys running past. He was sort of side on to goal, 40 out. Didn't give the handball to either of them. Twisted around, had a shot and missed badly. So give that, off you go. Just on Taylor Walker, how will you remember him, Lids, now that he's announced his retirement?
I'll remember him from a preseason game we played way back in 2010 at Princes Park. He kicked, I reckon he kicked six at this point in time, and I'm out on the wing. And I said, geez, Tex, you want to keep those boots, mate? They are absolutely flushing them. And he went and berated me. He was just like, get your head out of your ass, Lids. You, mate, you got to. I was like, big fella, wing nut. I said, I am pumping you up. I said, you want to keep those things. Right. So that's how I remember Big Texan. Always one of the best blokes, country fella, Broken Hill. One of the neatest, best kicks to watch kick the footy.
That's how I'll remember him. Yeah. Like his kicking. I'll just say, gee, he was an unbelievable kick both sides of the body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For goal.
And
for goal. And
quirk
in
his lineup before goal where he's just, where he gives himself a little tap on the leg, wipes his hand on his ass, and then usually knocks him through 706 times.
Yeah. Mm. Amazing kick. Both at goal and around the ground. Just a phenomenal kick of the footy and a great loyalist to the Mustaka that he's had right throughout his career. Mm. Fremantle have won the last three against Adelaide, six of the last seven and seven of the last nine. So it doesn't bode well for the Crows. Last time they met, Fremantle won by 2 points. This was the Alex Pierce smother game. The smother at the end on James Peatling. It was a cracking game of footy. Freo led by 34 in the third quarter, fell 10 points behind in the last, came back and won it again. So we get to see them go at it on Friday night to open the round.
Richmond and St Kilda, would the Saints have convinced Naz enough that they're on the right track, Lids, in your mind?
Well, I'd like to get your thoughts on it, given how much you're a Ross fan. I don't know, mate. Like, I get it that they've brought in a lot of young, a lot of new players, and it takes time to gel. But for my biggest query around them is the development of their young players and their lack of want to play them. You know, Filippo, Taru, Trevalia. They'll hang their hat on Hall and Garcia, who have come into the side. Wilson started to play some better footy this year, granted. But those other guys who have been their top 10 picks, where have they developed and where have they got better? So, and I think they're the ones that are going to take this side forward ultimately, you know. But, yeah, mate, 4 years in and they played finals once straight off the back of Brett Ratten coaching the side. Yeah. I'm not sure, mate. If I'm Naz, I'm probably looking at what else may be out there at the end of next year, given that he signed that two-year deal. But how do you go backwards too? You got to pump a lot of cash to pay a man because he's already on a huge wicket.
6th, 12th, 12th, 11th, the 4 years under Ross at the moment. And by the way, if we were still in a top eight system, they'd already be mathematically eliminated.
Yeah. So percentage is up, 13.1%. They've gone past 100 seven times this year, but they're 4-3 in those games. Mm. So, you know, it's nigh on even money, and they only did that once last year. But they also have a lot of scores just over 100 this year. They had a lot last year that were just under. So they're about a goal a better team this year than they were compared to last season.
It feels like, I said this on Tuesday, it feels like the Saints and the Bulldogs are both going to live their 2025 experience again next year. Like the Saints are going to live the whole year trying to convince Naz that they're on the right track and he should stay. And the Bulldogs are going to live the whole year trying to, you know, for Luke Beveridge essentially to keep his position. He's been there obviously a long period of time. He's been as decorated a coach the Dogs have ever had in their history, and yet it feels like a year in the hot seat for both the Saints and the Dogs next year. Quick one on your Tiggs, Lid. So Tom Lynch going around again. Mitch Cleary reporting a verbal commitment for him to play on into a 17th season. Is that the right call?
Yeah, I think so. Oh, I think with the development of those young players, you know, Armstrong, Fawcett, Jonty Fall, Sims maybe, you know, those, they just need some direction and some guidance. And who else? I mean, I don't think Noel Bolter's going to be the guy that can to lead those guys to teach him how to play forward. He's going to be a bit parts player, ruck and back and whatever else he does. But Tom Lynch, I think in terms of experience, yeah, I reckon that's important for these young guys. And he doesn't have to play every week, but he'll probably play, you know, 10 games maybe max and be able to give them some protection and some guidance, but teach them the tricks of the trade.
I'm 100% with you. They're not so flush with senior players that if they can get another year out of him for everything else that he gives them at training and working with those young group, I was surprised there was as much of a pushback on that as there was. It's not as if he's going to be on huge chips or anything like that. Nah. So, I think it's a no-brainer. He goes around again.
North Melbourne and Geelong, how much would the storm around the concussion waiver be impacting the playing group down there at Geelong, Lids, if at all?
Yeah, I haven't spoken to Connor about it, if that's what you're asking, but I don't imagine that it would impact them a hell of a lot. They'd be very supportive of Jake and trying to make sure that he's okay. I get it, there's a lot of noise around it, but I found that he hasn't been at training and he's not going to play this weekend. Has there been an explanation as to why? Is it because of the noise, or what's the reason why he's not playing?
They've just said he'll stand down for this round.
I think it's a combination.
But why though? I don't understand why.
So I think it's a combination of reasons. One, he's been away from the club and hasn't been training. Two, with the removal of the waiver, what does it mean? Is he appropriately protected if he plays footy? Like if he goes out there and has a catastrophic injury or receives head trauma, does the waiver count? Like without the waiver, are they willing to take him on and have the contract in the same way? Because it feels like, Geelong only took him on with that waiver in place. They didn't know at the time that it didn't, it wasn't worth the paper it was written on. But clearly that
they
was part
of... You don't reckon they didn't know? Why didn't they lodge it then?
Well, why would they have it then?
Yeah.
Why do it if you don't think it has some level of impact?
I don't know. These are the questions that we need that King's Council to go and get answered for us, don't we? So, I don't know. It surprises me that he's not playing, but if that's the reason, well, then you can understand it too, can't you? So it's like, well, yeah, I think that the support from a teammate's point of view is just making sure that he's good and sound, first and foremost.
Cats won the last 15 head-to-head against the Kangaroos. Last time they met, they kicked 16 goals after halftime and won with a leg in the air. So bit for the Kangaroos to do. That's actually the longest win streak in the game, any one side against another.
It always makes me think of the Sam Kekovic story. I think I told this last year. He and Barry Cable would catch the... they would drive themselves while the rest of the team got the bus. They were leading at halftime. Then they lost by 10 goals and everyone said, "What happened, Kekka?" He said, "The bus arrived."
We love it. Also on Saturday, Brisbane up against the Gold Coast. So this in the twilight spot. It is, of course, another edition of the Q Clash and a rematch of last year's semi-final. Is the Lions' best lids still the best that there is in the competition?
I got this completely wrong last week. I was with a lot of the naysayers and jumped off the Lions and thought they were done because they've shown a willingness to fold. In terms of that third quarter against the Giants and then getting absolutely beat up. But I think Phil Davis put it really well. I heard him on radio saying that when they're interested, they are the best. If they've got something to play for and something to stand up for against the best teams and whatever else. Now, that's no disrespect to the Giants or the Blues. But when they feel like they're under the pump and they get full buy-in, how can you argue against that they're the best? Absolutely wallop sides.
Sorry, Lids. It feels like, we always say, oh, you can't flick the switch. You can't decide to defend one week to the next. Feels like Brisbane can. It feels like Brisbane are the team that can. They can go, you know what? We're ratcheting it up this week. And I watched the first 5 minutes of their match against Hawthorn, I was like, oh, wow. They are so on today. This is bad news for Hawthorn. Then Hawthorn had a pretty good patch, but you felt like early on you could identify that Brisbane were right up for it.
Yeah, can't fake urgency. I think with Brisbane, we've spoken about it as the years gone on. They know that there's a difference between this time of year and in round 9, for example, when everyone's saying, "Oh, it's time for Brisbane to show something." As long as they get themselves in a reasonable state where they're going to be top 6 and probably more than likely top 4. They're going to have to win a final on the road to get a home prelim, but. They're still the number one seed for me.
It feels very much like the last dance, doesn't it? Like the band is breaking up. Like it feels clearly Lockie's going. We know that. Still, Zach Bailey hasn't re-signed. We were told that was imminent a few weeks ago. He still hasn't put pen to paper. I'm just smiling at Lids while I say all of that. And then what happens with Danny Daly, Chris Fagan? He's out of contract to the end of next season. So... I think it feels like this is the last run at it. Can they make it a three-peat like the Brisbane Lions of the early 2000s, or what happens from there?
Well, and that's it, mate. I think you've almost hit the nail on the head, is that they're having a damn good run at it. But then you look at their 22 and under side, like they've got the most of just about any side. Like usually the teams that are challenging have got laden with older players, and experienced heads, but you look at Morris, the Ashcroft boys, Lohman, Annable coming through.
Fletcher.
Wilmot.
Fletcher, Wilmot.
I thought you said Zorko.
Oh, no. he's definitely the other end. He's definitely the other end. But you're right. It's the equal most. So they've got 5. The Kangaroos have 5. 22 under 22. And yet they're the two-time reigning premiers, played in 3 consecutive grand finals. Just on your old mate Dimmer, I did the game on Sunday, and he spoke pre-game about, you know, I haven't had a great year. I needed to reflect on my coaching. I thought I saw where the game was going to go, and I got it wrong. And Ben and Half spoke about it on this podcast on the Sunday night edition, if you can find that in ABC AFL Daily. So it's sort of, I'm sure you would have seen that side of Dimmer in the past where, you know, yes, he can be a hard task master at times, but a bit of vulnerability where basically he just said, hey, you know, I'm happy to take on the feedback. Didn't get everything right myself, and let's charge forward. And sure enough, they snap a 10-game losing streak and played some pretty good footy in the nation's capital.
Yeah, I think he's, well, to be honest, I think he's always been reasonably good at trying to take the load and take the stress away from his players. In terms of a post-game, it very rarely will you see him lay blame on an individual player or the playing group unless they completely bugger it up and it is on them. But more often than not, he is that guy that... it's strange for him with all of his experience that they've got. He thinks that they've got the game plan and the game style wrong in terms of what was going to happen in the AFL this year. Yeah, so they'll go to work, no doubt, and they'll try and get better. But they're going to be without some players, I think, or some of their better players if King's going, and who knows what's going to happen. If you, what's your thoughts on Matty Rao? What does he do? Mm. Given he's out of contract next year, is he a free agent next year? Or is he only 6 years in? I think he might be 8 years in.
I think he'd be pre-agent this year. So
that will get compensation next year, or get a couple of first rounders this year in a compromised draft next year. What do you do? Like, I don't know.
Just on Dimmer, I actually think that was him being a hard taskmaster. I think we know he's worked a lot with Ben Crowe, who speaks a lot about vulnerability and owning your own story, etc. I think this is Dimmer saying, look, I'll put my hand up and say I've got some things wrong. But you all have to do that as well. And you all have to go away and look at yourselves in the mirror and work out how you're going to improve for next season. I'm supremely confident that the Gold Coast Suns, even if they lose King, even if Rao throws his hat in the ring to go, that I think they'll come again next year. Right. I think there's enough talent there. I think Dimmer will get it right.
I'm not so sure about that.
Not sold. I think it's second year in with a bunch of kids, you know, and you're losing experience again. Not for mine.
Yeah, he needs to keep as many of them together as he can. If King goes, great, but the rest of them, that they got to hopefully charge up the table. And he's saying, oh, we think we're like Fremantle and we've had a gap here and we'll go back up. I'm not so sure. I mean, if I'm putting together my top eight, top 10 now, I'm not so sure I've got them in there for 2027. The Hawks and the Pies, Saturday night at the G. This one's really directed at you, Lids, after your comments here last week. Did you lose trust in the Hawks last Friday?
A little bit, yeah. And I didn't know the stat that Benny reeled out until after about the Hawks haven't beaten the top 10 team since round 5, I reckon, was your stat, Benny. And that, to me, just says that when, you know, they're very good at getting the job done against the teams well below them. But then when you get to, you know, the better sides, and they just haven't been able to get it done. So... am I right in that stat, Benny?
I think it's only one top 10 team. It was Adelaide.
Which was Adelaide at York Park, who they always beat. So since round 5, losses to Melbourne twice, Melbourne clearly have their measure, Fremantle, the Western Bulldogs, Brisbane, and a draw against Collingwood. And I just want to put my hand up as well. It was Lee Montagna who towed me into that stat.
Yeah.
I ran it on Sunday night thinking he was going to do it on first crack, but realised they didn't have a show. So Joey still hasn't rolled that out, and I've sort of claimed it as my own, but it was his.
And then when people hear him say it, they'll be like, oh, I had Ben Cameron say that on Sunday night. Port Adelaide and Melbourne also on Saturday night over in Adelaide. Zach Butters, obviously a lot of conversation around him. He's on the comeback trail, 20-something days post-surgery from his syndesmosis. What's the benefit of him playing now, Leeds, in the second last round?
I don't think there's any. And look, he absolutely battled his backside off of that side, you know, right up until the point where he got injured. And I get that he wants to try and get back to play what we think will be your last game. I tell you what, buy beware. If you're not buy beware, because he's still a damn good player, but you wouldn't want him coming back and then aggravating it and then having this, you know, sit
more
out
surgery,
and have more surgery or whatever else. I don't see, it's admirable that he's trying to, because he wants to be, you know, do the right thing and whatever else. But, mate, just rest on the 18, 19 games, whatever you played prior to that, and you were the one or first or second rated player every time you played.
I'm not a physio or a surgeon, but the way that he plays, where he's sort of zippy and agile and, you know, pivots hard off his strong leg, It's putting a lot of talk on that ankle.
Yeah, if you're his agent, Lids, would you advise him against it?
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Oh, I would do.
I just don't see the point. There's nothing to be gained.
Speaking of nothing to be gained, is there anything to be gained for Jack Viney playing this late in the year? Does he add to Melbourne's team? Is he in their best 23 still?
No, I don't think he is. I think that as hard as and as respected as he's been over the journey, I think he clogs him up a little bit more. And unless he's going to play like as a pure defensive lockdown half forward or something like that, I don't think he adds to their midfield mix that they've been playing so well with all year.
Mm. Sunday footy?
Yeah, so GWS and West Coast. Aaron Cadman or Harley Reid in an open draft, Lid. So the 2023 and 2022 number one draft picks, which way would you go?
Harley. Yeah, 100%. I love Aaron Cadman and the way he launches at it and whatever else. But I think if I'm building a side around arguably one of the best young midfielders in the game, he's leading the clearances for every single player across the competition? Mate, yeah, I think he's just growing. And as soon as he can iron out his kicking, I think, especially for goal, he will become one of the best players in the game.
Yeah, he had a bad off-season from year one to year two, which is no heinous crime because plenty of young footballers do. Year two to year three, he got it right. He came back and he's been he looks hard and fit and lean. He's going really well. Just on Aaron Cadman as well, he's a fascinating story. He didn't play much key forward as a kid, so had a big growth spurt in, you know, between his bottom age year and his top age year where he really became a key forward. So that was only really the time that he played that role. But I just did the numbers just as an exercise. So after 75 games, he's kicked 108 goals, Aaron Cadman. Mainly made me realise how good Buddy Franklin is. After 75 games, Buddy Franklin had kicked 216 goals.
Jeez.
So, like, you look at Jack Riewoldt, 159, Josh Kennedy, 116, Tom Hawkins, 98, Buddy Franklin, 216. Mm. Like, he was a freak early on.
The Eagles obviously beat the Giants earlier this year, and Harley was dominant in that game, had 34, kicked a goal, 12 inside 50s, 10 clearances, had a wicked stat line as the Eagles came from behind earlier in the year. The Western Bulldogs up against Carlton, this is the game of the round. Basically, the equation is pretty simple here. If the Blues win, the top 10 is set, so we can't change. Essentially, positioning can move, but the 10 teams will know come Sunday night that will be participating in the finals if the Blues break through. Is there a path, Lids, that Josh Fraser is no longer the coach of Carlton for 2027? Is there any path from here that he doesn't win the top job now that he's declared for it?
Oh, look, yeah. I was not strong, but I was swayed the other way as to that I didn't think he would be because I thought that, you know, he's at a hiding to nothing next year if they don't continue to rise the way they have, and who knows what's in front of them for this year first. They haven't even completed that. But to come from 1-8 to now be locked into play, and I get it, it's a wild card because that wasn't there before, which is fine. But it's pretty damn impressive, isn't it? So, yeah, I think he's... It couldn't go any other way, could it? Like,
no.
What's your thoughts?
Exactly that. Yep. I feel like now it'd be harder not to give him the job than it is to give him the job. So I feel like it's almost easier now just to say, look, you're our guy. 10-2. It's been the best run that we've seen from a caretaker. It's also the second best run that Carlton have had in 25 years.
They always say that self-praise is no praise. But anyway, we did say this all along on this podcast that he would be added to the process when it was down to the final few and he would be a part of it. And sure enough, here we are.
If you don't toot your own horn, there's no music, as we like to say. The last time they met, by the way, was Josh Fraser's first game in charge, where Carlton kicked 5 goals to zip in the last quarter back in round 10. And then the last game of the weekend, Essendon up against the Sydney Swans. Now, we've learned, despite the fact that the formal presentation's finished on Saturday, Lids, we're not going to get an answer until next week. What does that tell us, that the Essendon coaching decision won't be made for another week despite the fact the presentations have ended?
I don't know. I don't know what it tells us. I think the sooner they know, the easier it is for people to know what's going forward, especially players coming to the end of the year. You know, those conversations about where, you know, guys without a contract, what are they looking at? You know, guys they're trying to potentially bring in, you know, now they can get excited by that. I don't know. Are you leaning towards it telling something that I'm not picking up?
I mentioned on Monday that I feel like it's the fact that Mark McVay's coaching against them this week, so he's the assistant coach at the Swans. I wonder if they just think that that's awkward, that they kind of go, oh, well, if he's our guy, well, let's just wait another week rather than we announce him as our coach and then they got to, he's got to sit in the opposition coach's box against us on the weekend. So maybe that's it. I mean, I've been saying I feel like McVay's their choice for the last couple of weeks. I feel like he's a bit of a compromise for every option they've got. He's an Essendon person, but he's not, you know, the messiah, the club great. He's had senior coaching experience, but he's not the most credentialed. He's had senior coaching experiences as an interim. He's had assistant coaching experience, although he's not necessarily recognised as the top assistant coach out there. And I'm not sure necessarily that's how you should be picking your senior coach, but for me, it's felt like for a while he's a little bit of a compromise of all those things.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're also trying to predict what the Essendon Football Club's going to do. So this is a club, by the way, that, as we've said multiple times, said they were going to stick with Brad Scott, told everyone to be patient, and then they were impatient and sacked him halfway through the year, and they thought they were capable of more, and they're not. Two board members have other roles at the football club now. Former board member's the chief executive, another former board member's the interim coach. So whoever they picked, I'm 0% surprised, I think, from here, from trying to predict what Andrew Welsh and the Bombers will do.
Have you guys gone and looked forward to next weekend's round of footy? Is there any implications for any sides, or are we just basically just kicking tires until we get through the wild card?
So basically, if Carlton win, which we expect them to do against the Western Bulldogs, the 10 can't change. And then the only games that would have any kind of implication, well, the St Kilda Gold Coast games is dead as can be then on the Thursday night.
Collingwood and Brisbane still important for position inside the top 10.
Carlton and Fremantle could be anything. Same with Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs. They're two teams that are going to feature in the finals, as we know. And then really it'll just be the race for the top four and the race for the top six. But
So do we expect then that coaches will say, I see your letter that you've written to us, Swanee, but don't care and fine us if you want, but we're getting ready for the finals.
You'd be crazy if you didn't. Wouldn't you? Like, particularly for those, we got to remember it's only four teams. So the teams that finish in the top six, there's no reason that they should have a full hit out next week, because otherwise they're going to have 2 weeks off between games and then into the final. So I think the top, if teams are locked into the top six, I think they'll still play strong sides. But if you're in a wild card spot and you can't move and there's other Victorian teams around you and you know that it's not like you're going to end up on the road or anything like that, you should absolutely take the week off. Superdog time.
Let's do it.
All right, the only marginal movement last week. Ben, you did pick the Demons with a 13.5-point head start against the Dockers. They won, but only narrowly. Only won by 4 points. So you get five for that. You get five for the cover, plus you get four for the outright win. So that puts you on 114 points. I'm still out in front on 159. Lids is on 100. Lids took the Eagles last week. Narrowly missed out on a cover.
Oh, my God. Narrowly, what were they doing?
Narrowly missed out on a cover. 17.5 you were getting. They lost by 19. And I picked Port Adelaide, and they didn't get within Kooi, so they lost by 97 points. The games this week. Adelaide with a 22.5-point head start against the Dockers. Richmond with a 22.5-point head start against the Saints. North Melbourne catching 20.5 against Geelong. Gold Coast with a 32.5-point head start against Brisbane. Collingwood with 19.5 against Hawthorn. Port Adelaide, 26.5-point head start against Melbourne. The West Coast Eagles get 33.5 against GWS. It's too close to call. Bulldogs and Carlton. The Bulldogs only an 8.5-point dog. And Essendon with a whopping 10-goal head start against the Swans. Kick us off, Lids.
I'm going to go with North Melbourne.
Wow. Okay.
Ooh. I'll take Collingwood.
Yeah, that's where I would have gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I like that Collingwood one.
Lids, 20.5 points against the Cats. Ben's taking Collingwood, 19.5-point head start against the Hawks, which means I'm left with...
The Crows.
Probably.
The Tigers.
Yeah. Crows. I was thinking Crows or the Power even.
The Cats haven't played at the Docklands all year, so that's what makes me think. And they played reasonably well last week, midfield battle. Can they get something going? But I know it's 15 games. Time to break it, Roos. Mm. Let's go.
Give me the Crows. Give me the Crows. 22.5 points. I like what Richmond have been doing in recent weeks, but they played a wet weather game last week coming back from Adelaide. And even without Naz, I'm not so sure about that. So Adelaide for me. Good hit out. Leeds, enjoy the footy across the weekend. Have you got a game? Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at the G on Sunday watching the miserly, your team, the Bombers, be the Swans.
How good.
So, you tune in if you want to see me polish a turd.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks, Corb.
Thank you, Lids.
No worries, boys.
That's us done. An early edition of ABC AFL Daily, your full preview looking into round 23. Don't worry about the fact that we're away. We will be back across the weekend. Unfortunately, no show Saturday, but that's not really our fault. That's because the footy starts early on Saturday. There's a huge, huge day of footy, obviously, with no Thursday night game. So as a result, we will be here Sunday night. We will be here Monday night. So you can hear us then for a full wrap of the weekend on ABC AFL Daily. We're out of here.